You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly news podcast. We're recording this episode on Thursday, the 7th of March, and we're going to talk this week about what song Sweden's going to send to the Eurovision Song Contest. We'll chat to the leader of the Centre Party, Muharrem Demirok, about what it means for Sweden to join NATO. For Membership Plus subscribers, we'll discuss diplomatic immunity after an embassy vehicle drove 2 kilometres on train tracks in Stockholm. We'll look at how to get a digital mailbox and the dates for declaring taxes. And with new rules coming in to limit Swedish for immigrants classes to 3 years, we'll talk about language learning and why you quickly build up a bank of specialist vocabulary to navigate daily life in Sweden. I'm Paul O'Mahony in Stockholm, and I'm joined from the Malmö studio by Becky Waterton and Richard Orange. How are you both?
Cold.
I'm good. It was my daughter's birthday yesterday. It was exciting.
Very good. Now, Saturday night sees the final of Melodi Festivalen, bringing to an end the 6-week extravaganza in which artists compete to represent Sweden at this year's Eurovision Song Contest in Malmö in May. And Melodi Festivalen is, of course, hugely popular, regularly commanding the highest viewer figures in Sweden whenever it airs. And now we're down to the last 12 contestants. Richard, what have been your impressions from this year's competition?
I mean, I really want to like it. I mean, I like it as a cultural thing. You know, when you sit there with your friends and family discussing the songs and everyone else in flats across the country doing exactly the same thing. And it's kind of nice like that. But I think I made it to about the second round this year and I had my kids round and it was just screaming in the back of my head, you know, this is absolutely terrible. I think maybe it was Fröken Snusk. I'm not sure. I just suddenly thought, no, this is really bad. This is terrible music. And I think this year, if anything, it's even more cynical and formulaic than normal. It seems like a bit of a flat one to me. It seems like there aren't that many surprises. You know, you always have this sort of fake metal song, like one meaningful singer-songwriter song, which everyone knows will go nowhere. And then you have like the song that everyone knows is supposed to win. It's all kind of, it feels like it's kind of done in advance. And it also feels like it's been captured by a kind of tiny group of people in Stockholm. Like There's this guy, Jimmy Turnfelt, who's apparently known as Jimmy Joker, Wikipedia tells me. Anyway, but he's the writer on 5 of the 12 songs in the final, including the favourite. You know, 5 out of 12.
It's like, and he had another one that didn't even get to the final.
Is that even a competition? It's the same guy competing against himself.
He co-wrote the winning song last year as well.
And he co-wrote this year's Eurovision entry for Austria, apparently. So he's like, he has a kind of monopoly on it. And then the other guy who has a monopoly, this Thomas Jeson, he had 5 songs in the contest. And then there's another person that had 3, I think. So it makes it a bit samey, I think. You almost feel like it's like a bunch of people who meet in SVT headquarters in Gärdet and like go, okay, who's going to do the winner this year? Anyway, so it feels a bit samey to me. But then again, on the other hand, the Swedes do it so well compared to the Brits and, you know, unfortunately, probably also the Irish. You know, they have worked. It's formulaic, but they've got the formula down absolutely tight. They know what they're doing.
They do. And I know you've been following it quite closely, Becky, and you've been looking into who's most likely to win. So what are the bookmakers saying about who's best placed to lead Sweden's attempt to surpass Ireland as the country with the most Eurovision wins?
Yeah, I've watched them all so far, mostly out of habit more than anything else. I wouldn't say I Yeah, it's not like it's a highlight of my TV calendar or anything. My gut says that identical twins, Marcus and Martinez, who are actually from Norway, are going to win. And that's what the betting sites are saying too. They came second last year to Lorraine, who went on to win the whole contest. So this time they're back and hoping to represent Sweden in Malmö. They performed a song for Crown Princess Victoria for her 40th birthday in 2017. They've had a few songs chart here and were even on Masked Singer Sweden in 2022. They're only 22, have been child stars since they were like 12. So super popular with young people in particular. Mm. And the song this year is called Unforgettable, co-written by them along with Jimmy Thornfelt, who Richard mentioned before, and Joje Linnéadib, the same team behind their second place song last year. I think to kind of add to what Richard was saying, I wish that Eurovision, or I wish that Sweden could send like a kind of trashy, kind of jokey Eurovision song sometimes. I kind of, it annoys me they take it so seriously. Like, I wish they could send like a jokey entry.
Any other songs in the running, or are Marcus and Martinez definitely going to win it?
I think Danny Salcedo, who I think has been in it, he's qualified to the final maybe five times or something. He's also got a good chance, but it looks pretty clear that Marcus and Martinez are going to win, at least if you follow the betting.
Okay, great. Thanks for filling us in, and let's see how it goes on Saturday night.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I just want to briefly mention an episode of Sweden in Focus Extra that we have coming up on Wednesday, looking ahead to the upcoming European election and featuring a conversation Richard had with Jonas Hinfors, who's a political science professor at Gothenburg University. Here's a quick preview.
Only a couple of weeks ago, there was a poll indicating that most people weren't even aware that there was going to be a new election. They couldn't pinpoint, far fewer people could pinpoint the 9th of June date. But having said that, I think it is increasingly becoming more important. So the turnout, while still rather low, it's gone up quite drastically from the initial 44-45 to the previous one, the most recent one, 55%. And also, I think with climate change, with the war in Ukraine, all those events have made the EU sort of level much more evident in most people's minds.
That was Jonas Hinfors, and we'll have that full interview for Membership Plus subscribers on Wednesday. So earlier this week, on Tuesday, Hungary's new president, Tamás Súlyog, signed the document approving Sweden's membership of NATO, meaning that all 31 countries in the military alliance have now ratified Sweden's application. We're going to listen now to a chat that James Savage and I had today, the 7th of March, with Muharrem Demirok, the leader of the opposition Centre Party, about Sweden joining NATO. So how significant is it for Sweden to join NATO after centuries of first neutrality and then non-alignment? I mean, what does it mean for Sweden's place in the world?
Well, first of all, neutrality has been a great success for Sweden under a lot of years, and it's been part of our foreign policy, and it's been a massive support for that line, both between Swedish politicians and the public. But the world has changed, and the world changed significantly the 24th of February 2022, when Russia began their full-scale invasion of Ukraine. And I think all of us had a sudden wake-up call when we realized that our security, our freedom is threatened. And the public opinion when it came to NATO changed really quickly. quickly. And even among a lot of political parties, Center Party has been pro-NATO since beginning of 2015. So for us, it was a natural step to be a part of NATO now. But it's going to change Sweden's security. It's going to, for the better, it's going to put us in a different place when it comes to our foreign policy and how we can work with other countries. So it's going to be a change for us as a country. It's going to be something else. We've been outside of NATO for a long time and talked about it. And now we are finally there. We are going to become members any moment now. So it's going to be a shift in our mindsets that I think is the biggest challenge for us as a nation.
And you mentioned that your party, you changed position on this quite a long time ago, in 2015. You were sort of in the middle of the pack, perhaps, in terms of changing opinion on NATO. But you've been opposed to NATO membership for the previous 60 years. What was it for your party that changed that equation?
The state of the world and what's happening. We must remember that the full-scale invasion that happened the 24th of February 2022 in Ukraine, it wasn't the start. It was just further escalation of Russian aggression. A couple of years earlier, they went into the Crimea Peninsula. And before that, they have tried to push their limits further in Caucasus, in parts of Asia. So Russian aggression has been with us for at least 20 years, and we've seen the consequences. We've seen the consequences in Chechnya. Now the pictures, the images that we have in our minds from Chechnya are repeating itself in Ukraine, but we see the consequences of Russian aggression. So we've been pushed into this to realize that the world has changed. The world is changing for the worse in some parts, very good in a lot of parts, but in some parts for the worse. And our security is threatened. And that's what pushed Center Party into becoming a full-scale supporter of NATO, a full-scale supporter of Sweden changing its view on foreign policy as well. So I'm glad that we took that that step in 2015, and I'm glad that Sweden has taken it now, because we are a little bit late, if you ask me, when it comes to NATO membership, but better late than sorry.
And it's taken a little bit longer to join than maybe successive governments anticipated, with Turkey and Hungary putting up roadblocks along the way. How do you think this government and the previous government have handled the process?
I'm going to leave that to the historians to make the judgment of what could have been done better or worse. I think that we should be glad now that we are here. And that's what my focus is. We are here. Everyone could have made different decisions during this way, but we're here now. And I think all the political parties, almost all the political parties, should tap themselves on the back and say, well, job well done. But there's some parties that have really pushed their limits when it comes to putting Sweden first in this issue. When we have parties that have really, they stood up and said that when the Quran burnings were in Sweden, we had parties here and that's...
Wait, are we going to name any parties here?
Well, we can say the Sweden Democrats that really came forward and said, well, burn 100 more Qurans then. And it really put Sweden in a difficult situation, in a very sensitive moment when it comes to the NATO process. It put Sweden in a difficult situation in the world, and it really threatened both our security and Swedish lives when it comes to when we looked at what happened around the world. A lot of Swedes were threatened around the world, and we even saw terror actions against Swedes in Brussels. Mm. Two people were killed there. I wasn't just disappointed. I was really mad about that way that the Sweden Democrats handled that process, and it just shows that they are not ready to take responsibility full out for Sweden.
Just to put some context for listeners, I mean, Richard Jomshoff was one of those members of the Sweden Democrats, who chairman of the Justice Committee, who said some very provocative things about Islam right at a very sensitive point of Turkey's ratification process. Are you saying, or is your interpretation, that this was a deliberate move to sabotage the NATO process by the Sweden Democrats? Or was it coincidental? What's your interpretation of that?
Well, we know that the ones that burned the Quran had connections to Russia, and the ones that also burned the Quran also had connections to the Sweden Democrats. They were paid on their payroll. So when you see those things, it's difficult not to start thinking about why are they doing this.
And Jomshoff himself?
Well, Yom Sof himself, you have to...
Because he didn't burn any Qurans, but he did say provocative things.
He said provocative things, and he said also, well, if they are provoked by burning a Quran, burn 100 more. I'm not comfortable in a country where we support the burning of books, any books, whatever the reason is. We shouldn't do that. History has taught us that burning books is not a good way forward. But also you see how irresponsible they are. In a difficult situation, they did this. Whatever the cause was for them doing this provocation, they did it. And it shows that it's not a party that is ready to take responsibility. And still they are holding the government by a steady grip and pushing them forward. So it's that's the only thing that I really... where I really got disappointed in how we handled this situation. And I got kind of... scared also where it was going to take us.
But the government managed to push it through despite being dependent on the Sweden Democrats. So does that show the limits of their power or what?
No, it put us in a difficult situation, and it put us in a situation where our fates were in the hands of others. We couldn't steer our way through this storm. And sometimes during this process, I felt like Sweden was a ship on a stormy ocean with a broken mast, and we were just in the hands of others. We didn't steer our own fate. And that scared me, because in a situation when it comes to our security, our freedoms, our safety, we should be holding the steering wheel, not others. So that's the only thing that I think a lot of us were a little bit confused when it comes to the government's handling. But when we look back at it, we went through this process together. All the parties are now behind the government's actions in this, and we are ready to celebrate our NATO membership any day, any moment.
Perhaps today.
Any minute.
And criticism of NATO membership has traditionally come from the left in Sweden. But recently we saw Johan Wenström, who's a right-wing commentator, came out and say that there's a risk that Sweden's commitments to NATO could undermine the country's own territorial defence. And he's at the Swedish Defence University. And his view is that Sweden is too sort of credulous when it comes to NATO's Article 5, and that not all countries in the alliance would in fact leap to Sweden's defence if it were ever to come under attack. Do you see any value in that kind of criticism?
I think that we're not used to debating NATO in Sweden, only when it comes to pro or against. But now we are in a situation where we have to debate all the details also. And I welcome that debate. I think it's good for us. I think it's good for us as a nation to discuss all the different views in this. And I'm glad that these opinions are coming through. And I think, when we become a NATO member, I for one won't celebrate. Because I don't think it's something to celebrate. We are a member of NATO because the world is changing for the worse. It's nothing to celebrate. I'm really glad that we are a member of NATO. But celebrating by eating cake or popping champagne, I don't think it's the right thing to do. So I think we really need that discussion, that debate about Sweden's security, the world's changing. We are a member of NATO. We are a member of the European Union since a lot of years. How are we going to use these memberships, the context that we're in, for us to value democracy, freedom, and realize that the world is changing for the worse in some cases? But I think we shouldn't over-dramatize this as well.
One aspect of how Sweden will change its strategy, or the one important part of this strategy, is going to be military exchanges as arms sales to other NATO countries and to countries nearby. And one element of this is obviously Ukraine. And you've argued that Sweden should be sending JAS Gripen planes to Ukraine. But the government wanted to wait until after Sweden joined NATO. Well, by the look of things, by the time this podcast is released, Sweden will have joined NATO. Would you expect Sweden to supply Ukraine with fighter jets soon?
I hope that the government can invite the other party leaders now and push the button for Gripen, release the Gripen to Ukraine. It's we have to realize what's at stake here now. Sweden is now the Nordic country that gives least amount of support to Ukraine. The Danish government has raised its support to Ukraine to 2.5% of their GDP. We are at around 0.5% of our GDP. you cannot do a job like that supporting Ukraine if you want them to win. And I hope we all can agree that Ukraine must win. And Putin has to lose this war. And he has to lose it big time, because a predator never gives up after taking down the first prey. You need him to lose big time, because if he doesn't lose, he loses, he's going to push it further. He's going to take the next country and the next country. And he's always going to push the limits for what he can do and what we will let him do. So that's why I'm saying that the best investment we can do in Swedish security is to send more support, military and economic, to Ukraine, and to give them the best thing that we have, the finest thing we have, JAS Gripen, because if they don't push back Putin, no one else will. So we have to give them this support. The Center Party and myself, we didn't want to wait for NATO membership, but the other parties said, well, maybe we should wait for NATO membership. Okay, let's do that. And now we have the NATO membership. Let's push the button and say, go now. So I hope the government, hopefully on Monday, when this is broadcast, they will have raised the Swedish flag outside the NATO headquarters in Brussels. And after they have celebrated with cake or champagne and whatever they celebrate with, let's get together and send Gripen to Ukraine.
But just to be clear, you wouldn't mind Sweden being first with this, because other countries have promised fighter jets, but they haven't been, as far as I know, delivered yet. Would you feel comfortable with Sweden being the first country to deliver fighter jets to Ukraine, if that was possible?
Well, I think what I've heard is that the F-16s will be delivered later this year, maybe during the summer period. So I don't know if we're going to be first, but it doesn't matter who's first in this. The thing is that you cannot just send one type of fighter jet. You need a system. And the JAS Gripen, it was made for this kind of situations. It's a fighter jet that is made for meeting a superior enemy in a situation where you need a fighter jet that is capable of a lot of things. And it will complete the F-16s in a perfect way. So you will give air superiority to Ukraine over the Russian army. And I've spoken to a lot of people, experts in the war that's going on in Ukraine, and they said, well, if you don't have air superiority, it's hard to motivate the troops to go forward when they know that going forward also means getting missiles from the sky raining down on you. But if you can get air superiority, we can motivate the troops to go forward. And that's what we also need to realize, that they're fighting against a superior enemy. They're fighting against the enemy that's not afraid of raining terror over civilians and militaries in Ukraine. So we have to do everything we can to support them in winning this war and beating the hell out of Putin. That's what we need to do. We have to push that predator back to his cage in Moscow.
And these Saab Gripen, they're made primarily in your home city as well, right?
I know. I have a sticker on my former office that said, "I love the sound of jet noise." Because and
this is Linköping.
This is Linköping, where you were mayor.
Yes, but the thing is also, we used to have discussions about the noise that the Gripen makes, and it makes it difficult to build houses and residences in a couple of areas in Linköping. And I always used to tell people that was annoyed by this noise, that, oh, the jet noise is so loud. Well, have you heard Russian MiG, how much noise they made? No? Yes. And that's thanks to Gripen. That's why we never will hear any sound from the Russian MiGs over Linköping. That's the sound of freedom. Sorry, I'm sounding like as a commercial for fighter jets, but I love the sound of jet noise.
It's the first qualification to be Swedish Prime Minister, so you're getting that.
That was the Centre Party leader, Muharrem Demirok, and you'll be able to hear the rest of the interview with him early next week. And we had a wide-ranging discussion touching on everything from the suspicion and criticism directed at him over his previous dual Turkish-Swedish citizenship to his party's opposition to the government's plan to increase the minimum salary to the median wage for work permit applicants. So do make sure to tune in for that.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.